Welcome to episode 96 of the Annex Wealth Management SWAT podcast. It's Monday, March 25th, 2024. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. It's insight and perspective from members of the Annex Wealth Management Investment Committee. Joining us today, the Killer Bees, Blaine Disrude, research analyst. Welcome.
Morning, Danny.
Dr. Brian Jacobson, chief economist. Welcome to you.
It's great to be here.
And as always, this big shout out to our listeners. If you like what you hear and you want to share it with a colleague, we'd be very appreciative of that. Please feel free to spread the word because it helps us get our thoughts out there and let people know what Annex is thinking. So with that, last week was obviously a very big week when it came to central policy and what was going on with the Fed, and not just the Fed, but other central banks. Mm-hmm. So Brian, you want to kind of give us a segue into what we're seeing this week?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This past week was really exciting as far as what the Fed did or didn't do. Swiss National Bank deciding to cut rates, being the first developed market central bank to actually cut rates here. We also had some economic data, but this upcoming week here is really kind of void of a lot of really, I think, juicy data. The biggest one, I think, is going to be on Friday, Good Friday, where the PCE data, so personal consumption expenditure data, comes out. That's backwards looking, looking at February. How are people spending their money? It also includes how are they making their money, so incomes. And an important part of that release is the Fed's preferred target for inflation, the PCE deflator. We know that they are targeting 2%. Now, we've already gotten a lot of the data that goes into that. We have the CPI numbers, so the consumer price index, and the PPI, some components there, producer price index, feed into PCE, so it's probably going to be a big nothing burger. But there can always be surprises. You never really know.
And with that, I mean, the two last prints that we've had for inflation has been warm, mm-hmm. right? And yep. Powell has said he wants to see more good data. If this commingles with what we've seen with the last two prints of warm inflation numbers, it could change the amount of cuts that we're pricing in for the year, or even the discussion for what could come in May from what the Fed discusses then. So, I mean, I think it's got, like you said, there's a lot of it already like known, but if there mm-hmm. is any sort of surprise, it could have an effect on the following Monday when the markets open up and when we see what happens.
Yeah, it really could. When you go into something and everybody knows how it's going to come in, if there's even a small whiff of it being a little off, right, as far as too hot or too cold, then it can have outsized responses. And that's really interesting. At the press conference, Chair Powell had talked about how they were effectively kind of ignoring the January and February numbers due to seasonalities.
Right. Right?
He didn't really say they were ignoring it, but he said,
if you read through the lines.
Yeah, you can kind of read through the lines. It's a tricky period of time for them to seasonally adjust things. And so the CPI and PPI, maybe they'll ignore that. But the PCE is such a broader basket. It's not quite as affected by the seasonal distortions that can happen as those narrower baskets. And so it'll be a really interesting one to look at and will likely set the stage for what the market prices in for rate cuts. Fed and the market seem to be seeing eye to eye that, let's say, June, 3 cuts. Okay, if that's kind of the base case,
right,
is that going to change? And if it does change, how abruptly? One of the, I think, key strengths from this past week to kind of segue into the SWAT portion is that Powell's press conference, and maybe this is a weakness, I don't know, I viewed it as a strength, is in his prepared comments, he had always been talking about inflation, inflation, inflation. But this time he said that they could cut if there was an abrupt change in the outlook for the labor market. And that was the first time in a long time that he almost hinted that they could respond to labor market weakness through rate cuts, as opposed to kind of embracing labor market weakness as just the collateral damage necessary to get inflation lower.
It's almost, you know, to a point where you have the Fed being reactive. They're trying to set the stage of being proactive and wanting to go with what they're seeing as far as inflation's coming down. They are trying to be restrictive, and we'll talk about that kind of in our threats as far as stagflation, quote unquote, is it there. But if they're getting inflation moving in the direction they want, which they have had, you and Todd had mentioned back in December, I think it was, that markets don't move in a straight line.
Mm-hmm.
economies don't move in a straight line. So you have these periods where you have, like we've seen with inflation here, a bump, if you will, right? It can get exacerbated, but all the while the Fed's keeping their policy and their messaging to try and say, no, you know what, this is how we're going to move forward. And the markets reacted, I think, fairly well to that. And they took it almost as if, okay, we're moving down this path and equities rallied and they've done well. And that's one of, I guess, what we marked as like a big strength is even through all this policy talk that's been going on, the equity markets have actually held up really well and have caught a bid through it. And it's just been pretty impressive to see how well not just equities, but other asset classes too have, in essence, just the tide's kind of lifting on asset prices.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it, is the tide is lifting all of these boats, whether it's equities, gold, or even credit. If you look at credit spreads, I mean, how did that kind of react to the Powell's press conference?
It's really, I mean, spreads, and we've talked about this, has been, they've been tight and they haven't opened up. They've even come in a touch more than what we've seen going back over the last 6 months. What's interesting about that is you have all these companies that have been not necessarily issuing debt, but they're starting to, and it hasn't shifted those spreads to wider. Now, the supply is starting to come online and people are eating up that supply. Like,
yeah,
there is a demand for corporate debt, and it is good to see that people aren't shying away, and actually fixed income, now that with rates where they are actually compensating investors. So,
yeah, the all-in yield on these. So even if spreads are really narrow, when you just kind of look across the landscape and like, okay, the all-in yield, whether it's treasuries, investment grade, or high yield, it's like, okay, that's pretty attractive. So maybe that's where people are like, at what point do I start getting out of cash and money markets, which is still at an attractive yield? At what point do you want to start moving out there? And I mean, a lot of clients that I speak with, it seems like what they are waiting for or looking for is not necessarily treasuries. It's like, okay, if I can get 5% on cash, what investment grade or even high yield can get me more than that?
Right.
So it's almost like the spread relative to comparable duration treasuries doesn't matter so much as it is the spread relative to cash.
Right. They want to be able to continue to keep their five and a quarter going out 5-10 years on corporate debt, which is essentially where you have to look if you're going to try and capture that same sort of yield. And given the fact that there's at the moment low default risk inside investment grade, it's not a bad spot to look.
No, not at all. Especially since another one of the strengths is with manufacturing. The S&P Global Purchasing Manager Index came in above 50 for the third month in a row. So maybe the long hibernation of manufacturing, the recession that they had been in, is beginning to turn. Housing, those numbers have been pretty impressive, although of course there's a lot of distortions when you look at the February versus January numbers since January with how cold it was. I mean, it basically froze the housing market. So we saw a huge jump with existing home sales. Probably won't repeat, but you know, people have adapted to these higher mortgage rates. They have come down from 8% down to something closer to what, like 7, 6.5. And if we get some stability, that's oftentimes what starts pulling people into thinking about, should I buy, should I lock it in, knowing that I have the option, at least in the United States, this isn't a global thing, but at least in the United States, you can always refinance, hopefully at a lower rate, maybe a year and a half from now.
And we talked about that on the team discussion that we have every week about, we've come from a period over the last decade of ultra low rates. They drastically changed over a 2-year period. However, if you look back prior to that decade, you know, rates today aren't all that different than what they were. So people just are starting to actually adjust to that. Mm-hmm. Corporations are adjusting to that. And while it's still, we're in what we would say restrictive policy, people are still able to function and work.
Yes.
And the fact that we have so much stimulus and fiscal deficit as we have, it's allowed people to, I think, accommodate and move forward in a manner that hasn't led to what had been a consensus view at the very beginning of a hard landing, and mm-hmm. now there's the discussion of soft and no landing and et yep. cetera, right?
That is possible. Even if we get service sector softening as far as the activity there, it's likely to stay positive, but manufacturing beginning to get a footing, that should be, I think, beneficial. Another thing I think will be really important to watch is China just recently decided to allow their currency to depreciate rather abruptly, much more than what people were expecting. It reminds me of the 2015-2016 period where China had broken their peg to the dollar and decided that they were going to start targeting like a basket of currencies.
Sure.
And it was taken as almost an act of desperation, you know, like, okay, we've already exhausted everything we can do in terms of fiscal stimulus, monetary stimulus, so now let's use our exchange rate policy. That's the way it was interpreted by the markets. It didn't prove to be true. So you did see this big, I think, sell-off generally. It was actually the first market correction that we had since like 2012 period. So coming out of the Greek debt crisis, 2012 to 2015, it was a rather quiescent time for the markets. It would just seem to keep going up. China really kind of shook things up then as a result. It's likely not going to have the same effect this time because they are trying all these piecemeal attempts at stimulus. So maybe if we get, say, manufacturing starting to pull its weight, China starting to pull its weight, we could avoid that recession. And the United States could continue with what people have been calling this Goldilocks kind of scenario.
And it's, I mean, going back to as far as like somewhat of a weakness, right, is like you've had these roaming recessions. Yes. That we've talked about. We've gone through the manufacturing one, all the while services pulled a lot of the weight through mm-hmm. that. And now you're starting to see the manufacturing come back online. All the while you didn't have spreads blow out, you didn't have defaults come through. However, there are still some areas of weakness inside mm-hmm. of that realm. To that point, specifically when we're looking at credit, investment grade, their debt to EBITDA, or their leverage, if you will, is near decade highs. They do have a lot of debt as far as that needs to be issued or that is maturing. So there is issuance coming online, but there's been the demand for it. So mm-hmm. it's been holding up. And then margins actually on the investment grade side, which is usually your larger companies, is doing quite well. Like we've seen strong margins. They've been able to pass on the prices, capture that added revenue while not having the increase in costs. On the flip side of that though, high yield, while their leverage hasn't spiked, which some had thought, you know, and we're still coming up against what's known as or thought of as that maturity wall, and they're working through that. So you could see that leverage expand over the next year or two. The fact that it's not and hasn't expanded like the investment grade has, it gives people hope, I think, as far as, okay, the high yield space with spreads as tight as they are, there isn't this default risk necessarily given that leverage. However, that interest coverage, given how high interest rates have gone, mm-hmm. is deteriorating. And that's mm-hmm. something that needs to be monitored because that is going to then impact margins going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. It's something to really monitor there. Some of that nascent or early signs of some of the weakness, make sure it doesn't start almost spiraling out of control. The maturity wall thing, I always have viewed it more as almost like the opposite of Pink Floyd's The Wall, right? So you've got another brick in the wall. Yeah. That's how you build the wall. Well, the maturity wall is dealt with oftentimes by taking one brick off at a time,
yep.
you know, and that's, I think, what we're seeing. It doesn't seem as though it's just this flood of issuance that you need. Now, maybe if the Fed actually starts cutting rates, they get a few under their belt, then you will see a pickup in issuance. But right now, it just seems like they're able to chisel away a little one brick at a time at that maturity wall.
And I think
wall.
The fact that spreads are as tight as they are is helping with that. Mm-hmm. I think if you do see spreads blow out or open up somehow for whatever reason, then that could become a bigger issue where now a CFO who's trying to bring or reissue debt or restructure their capital stack might hesitate. And then all of a sudden you get this capitulation
yeah. moment,
like where it's like, oh, we need to get debt. Because we need it for funding whatever project. But right now it seems to be, yeah, like you said, it's just they're chiseling through it and it's yep. it's going smooth at the moment. It's just something that needs to be monitored.
Yep. Absolutely. Then I guess shifting towards the opportunities, you know, one of the things that we've been noticing on the equity side, so as manufacturing has been showing these early shoots, kind of spring shoots for the blooming of some growth there, is that the small cap stocks, their earnings per share, those have been actually somewhat flat to sometimes drifting lower. And oftentimes small cap value, especially since that's where you see industrials, that tends to correlate pretty well with manufacturing activity.
Sure.
And so I would like to see those begin to move up, where if we are indeed seeing this rebirth for manufacturing, that you should see the earnings per share expectations increase for small cap value, especially industrials. And we haven't really seen that too much. And maybe, I mean, I guess I tend to believe the manufacturing data more than the earnings expectations.
Sure.
Since expectations oftentimes can be driven by, you know, what's the broad market narrative, and that isn't necessarily always right.
Not to mention small caps generally don't have a ton of analysts following the company. So
yep.
There's like that lag effect, right? Where economic activity might show signs before the analysts actually believe or listen to the next earnings call or get their questions in to update their expectations. So
that's true. Yeah, that's a really good point.
There's that lag effect that...
Yeah. Yeah, you don't have all the coverage, and sometimes it's like, well, the expectations in here, those are from 2 months ago.
Yeah,
you know?
Right, exactly.
So they're not exactly the most
so watching that,
temper.
You know, the actual manufacturing index and seeing how that's shifting can be a good way to monitor that as
mm-hmm.
far as, okay, is this an area that we should be looking at as far as an allocation?
Yeah, yeah. So I would say it may be on the equity side. That's what I think could be a decent opportunity to explore. Is there anything like in the credit or on the curve positioning side of things that you're seeing?
We talk about, and we've been talking about the credit spreads and so forth, and high yield's done well. And I think you have to be very selective in that, just to the point of we've seen manufacturing go through what we would call a recessionary period of in and of itself. However, spreads didn't open up. Now there's going to be, that's broad on the index level. When you dig into it, there's going to be certain companies mm-hmm. that are deteriorating. That all gets back to what we've talked about before, about knowing the quality of the company, knowing the quality of the balance sheet, and really understanding what's going on under the hood, kind of being selective there.
Mm-hmm.
All the while offsetting that, if you are going to take on certain credit risk with types of duration management or so forth, so that if you're diversifying in a sense, in different ways, right? You're using credit and diversifying inside the credit space, but then using duration on the back side of that, in case that credit exposure doesn't pan out, the duration and the bid towards treasuries, mm-hmm. if we do see a slowdown or something of that nature, helps offset some of that.
Yeah, that's a really nuanced way to create the balance
right.
to kind of navigate this.
So just using those and pulling different levers in different ways to situate the portfolio in a way that should help let it succeed one way or another,
mm-hmm.
depending on how the risks play out. We monitor and talk about that all the time on the team. So.
Sure. Yeah. Now, in terms of threats, it does seem like valuations, I like to refer to them more as market multiples, because valuation is what you do. It's what, you know, Jason Cooper does. It's what our analysts
sure.
do. Discounted cash flow valuations, but market multiples like price to earnings, price to cash flows, they can be okay indicators of valuations, but it's not really what a real valuation is. But those multiples are fairly stretched in many situations, not across the board, and that probably creates some vulnerabilities. I've never known those valuations or multiples to create market sell-offs in and of themselves, except for like maybe during the tech bubble, right? So it has to be at an extreme level, but it can create certain vulnerabilities. And I think that maybe that's one of the threats, is what happens with the PCE data. If it is a little bit hotter than what people are expecting, because you can basically calculate what it should be. And so if it suddenly jumps, that changes the narrative that might be coming from the Fed, changes the market perception about the number of cuts, the timing of the cuts, so the enhanced volatility that might come from there. I think you've also flagged, as far as, does it change the narrative a little bit about stagflation? What is stagflation?
Yeah, so that's where you have low economic activity, but you have inflation on the backside of that,
yep.
right? So you're, in essence, just seeing prices just go up without being able to produce to mm-hmm. offset that. It's not so much that we believe it's there and it's prevalent. It's more that the narrative starts to creep into the market, and that in and of itself becomes self-fulfilling, which causes a sell-off or causes some sort of event to happen within the market or the Fed to have to react to people thinking about it, whatever. So just given the fact that we've had some warm CPI prints, we've had asset prices and financial conditions as easy as they've been since this whole hiking cycle, right? Like when we look at financial conditions, Goldman's, Bloomberg's, and the Fed's itself, like they all look like it's at an easy point, all the while the Fed's trying to be restrictive in their policy. Some of that gets back to what we've talked about before with the Fed policy, not Fed policy, but fiscal policy being as loose as it is right now and offsetting some of what the Fed is actually trying to do from a slowing of the economy standpoint. There's just a lot of liquidity still in the system, and having that rhetoric pop in can cause or scare, I guess, the markets, if you will.
Yeah, and that's a good way to put it, is a scare, right? And when I look at the history of market corrections and bear markets, and so if a correction is a 10% decline up to, say, 20, and then a bear market is 20 or more, the corrections are driven by fears. So that narrative, the fear of a recession, fear of inflation, fear of some geopolitical event. But the correction doesn't necessarily become a bear market unless that fear becomes a reality.
Sure.
Right? And that's where, okay, if it's the reality of a recession, the reality of stagflation, and that's where it's important for investors to know what their view is, right? So if the market narrative does shift towards stagflation, just ask yourself, do you believe it will actually become a reality? And then that can help inform, is it a buyable dip or not? Or is it something that, okay,
do you need to position for it?
Yep, exactly.
Like, how is the market perceiving it? How are you perceiving it? And then you position off of that, right?
That's
and that's
right.
The whole point of investment management and portfolio management in and of itself. Like, your view, market's view, and where do you position yourself to differentiate?
That's right.
What's our headline strength this week?
I would say manufacturing's mojo. It's coming back.
Headline weakness?
Pricing power to margin pressure.
Headline opportunity?
I got to give credit where credit is due, especially in the credit markets.
Headline threat?
Stagflation narratives.
It's the Annex Wealth Management SWAT Podcast. That's episode 96. Blaine Disrood, research analyst. Thanks.
Thanks, Danny.
Dr. Brian Jacobson dropping a Pink Floyd reference. Nice job. Brian is our chief economist. Thank you.
Thank you.
Annex Wealth Management, LLC, is a registered investment advisor. For more information about our firm, please visit annexwealth.com. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and is subject to change without notice. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and don't necessarily reflect on those of Annex Wealth Management, LLC. Information presented should not be construed as tax, legal, or investment advice, or a recommendation or a solicitation for the sale of any product or strategy. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from qualified professionals to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Investments involve risk. Neither Annex Wealth Management, LLC, nor its podcast participants shall be liable for losses resulting from decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on this podcast.